Shavua Tov. It really is a zechut to be here, or I should say to be back here after Shabbat here as well, and not to have an opportunity not merely to learn together, but to learn how to teach together. And I would argue that in addition to various issues that I'm sure were brought up throughout the entire morning regarding chinuch and challenges of education today, one of the most difficult challenges, as we know, is how to help our children, or also how to help direct our students in making choices. For decisions are so difficult in life, and kal v'chomer, we as mentors, who also find at times decision-making very difficult. And the question is going to be, how should we not merely help, but assist and direct our children and our students? So I'd like to begin with the first Rashi on this past week's parsha, Parshat Bahalotcha, who explains after the juxtaposition, the smichut parshiot, and with the story and the parsha of the Nisiyim, Rashi then continues to explain the very strange verb of baha'alotcha et hanerot. And he asks, taking into account that we've seen this commandment before, for Aaron to light the candles of the menorah, we've already seen this in Sefer Shemot and in Sefer Vayikra. And yet Rashi says, this is the first time that instead of using the generic term of lighting the candles, of lahadlik et hanerot, the Torah employs this very strange verb of baha'alotcha, as you basically allow the flames to rise. And Rashi asks on baha'alotcha, he says, why this term of aliyah? It comes to teach us, al shem shehalav ole katub badlakatan lashon aliyah, shetzarich lahadlik ad shetehei hashalhevet ola me'aleha. He says, firstly, this verb teaches us that it's not enough to light the candle. One has to make sure that the flame of the candle is sufficiently strong that it lights and it rises on its own. V'odarshu rabotein. And when we know whenever Rashi brings an additional midrash, he's trying to teach us an additional message because the first one really suffices. But he says, we also learn from the midrash of Chazal, shema'ala haita lifnei hamenorah, that there was a step right before the menorah, sha'alaha ha-kohen omeid umeitiv, teaching us that the kohen himself, baha'alotcha, would literally rise on the step before taking care of cleaning out the menorah and subsequently lighting the candles, lighting the wicks of the menorah. And I believe what Rashi is teaching us here really is the secret to chinuch in general. He explains that there are two ways of lighting a flame, two ways of making sure that our students, that our children, will ignite and also illuminate this world. And what are they? On one hand, it is our responsibility, laha'alot et haner, to make sure not only that the candle is lit, but that we invest in our children and our students the skills, the passion, the ideology to be able to raise their own flames. But at the same time, step number one is going to place the responsibility on us. Oh, darshu rabotenu. The only way that one can get to that state wherein one allows and one is going to provide for the flame to rise on its own is if the Kohen first takes a step up and he becomes elevated. It's only if we, the mentors, the parents, the educators, if we first somehow look and challenge ourselves, if we can rise on our own so that we can then help the flames continue to rise up as well. And these are the two challenges that we're going to speak about this early afternoon. Perhaps one of the most difficult challenges of education today, and namely to help our children, our students, in this decision-making process. So we begin firstly with Chazal, who explained to us how imperative it is that choices are made, especially when it comes to learning. Because both as a descriptive and as a prescriptive term, we find the first Amoraim, again, amongst whom Rav, and then the last of the Amoraim, Rava, we find both of them tell us, Ein Adam Lomei Torah Ela Mimakom Shelibo Chafetz, that in order to ensure the success of education, one has to choose to be educated. One has to desire. One has to, on one's own, decide, this is something that I want to learn. This is what I want to be engaged in. Ein adam lomei Torah, one is not going to be successful in learning Torah unless one chooses, unless one decides on one's own that this is what I want to do. And Rava says, as a prescriptive suggestion, la'olam, therefore, yilmor adam Torah b'makom shelibo chafetz, and therefore the greatest suggestion is one should choose what he wants to learn, and that's what one should pursue. And Chazal explained this based on the pasuk of Tehillim: "Ki im b'Torat Hashem chavtzo uv'Torato yegei yomam v'layla." Torah may begin as Torat Hashem; it's God's Torah. But once I make it my chifetz, once I decide that this is what I want to learn, then the Torah becomes mine. Uv'Torato, it's His Torah. Yegei yomam v'layla. Chazal explained the significance of choices in ensuring the paths that we pursue. And therefore, one has to have not only the decision, but also one has to have a certain directive, a desire to decide. One has to choose that path on one's own. And to begin then, to elaborate even on the words of Chazal, one could also quote Professor Albus Dumbledore in Harry Potter's Chamber of Secrets, who explains to Harry that it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are, far more than our abilities. To teach then how to make choices and how to live with our choices, we have to then, as parents, as educators, ask ourselves, how does one choose? And choosing is always going to be accompanied by a rejection of something else. And I believe that if we look at the famous story in Masechet Ta'anit that you see on your pages as well, that expresses at times what even the greatest of our leaders have to decide between. This can serve certainly as a lesson for today's time as well. We're going to turn to this fascinating story in Masechet Ta'anit of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph in the context of a declaring fast, particularly for the Ason, for the danger of the collapse of buildings. The Gemara relates the story about two Talmidei Chachamim, early generation Amorai Eretz Yisrael, who were saved from having walls collapse on them. And here's the story. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan, havi garse ba'uraita. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were studying Torah. Dechike lehu milta tova. And they were, at the same time, in dire straits. That's all we know. There was some tircha that was bothering them. But if you turn the page and you see Rashi, Rashi says, what was it? What was this tircha? And what was somehow this dechike? What was so dechuk? What was pressing upon them? Rashi is going to learn from the context and the various allusions that are going to be brought within the Gemara itself. Rashi learns that we're speaking about aniyut. They were both oppressed by poverty. And what did they decide to do? Amri nikum v'nizil v'nivadiska. So let's go. They decided amongst themselves, we're going to get up and we're going to begin a business venture to earn some money. Unekayim b'nafshin. And they said, this is a good choice. Because the Torah tells us, Efes ki lo yebcha evyon, let's fulfill this pasuk of trying to diminish as many poor people in society as possible. So with this conviction and with this decision, they decided to go off. They set out, Azlu otve tote guda riya. And they find themselves sitting next to a dilapidated wall, not realizing, obviously, that it's dilapidated, not realizing that they're placing themselves in a makom sakana. Havika karche rifta. And then they sat and they were eating bread. Atu tre malachi hasharit. And lo and behold, Chazal explained, two angels came. Shame Rabbi Yochanan to Amar Chad l'chavri. And Rabbi Yochanan overheard this discussion amongst these malachim. He heard one angel saying to the fellow angel, Nishti alai haguda v'niktalinu. Let us topple this wall on Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. And this way, and basically kill them. And apparently, one of the malachim said, what a bad choice they made to leave the Beis Medrash of Torah and to go pursue a parnasa. Shame on them. They should be killed for this. They left Chayei Olam Haba, and instead they're dealing with matters at hand with Chayei Sha'a. However, the other angel says, Amar lei, idach, shivkuna, no, you should leave them alone, because this wasn't a bad choice, rather, di'ika buhu chad, dekaima lei sha'ata. He says, don't kill them yet, because there's one of them who is going to take advantage of this. There is one of them, ultimately, of whom we're going to see greatness come from him, and therefore, it's not yet his time to die. And obviously, as we're listening or overhearing this conversation of the malachim, again, we're wondering, who are they speaking about? There are two gedolim here, Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa, and apparently they both decided at the same time that they're leaving the walls and the halls of the Beis Medrash to pursue a parnasa, and yet the malachim, or one malach assures the other, that one of them is going to become a tremendous Talmud Chacham. keep in mind that who is overhearing this conversation? Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan shama, Ilfa lo shama. Rabbi Yochanan overheard all of this, but apparently Ilfa didn't. And how do we know this? Amar le Rabbi Yochanan le Ilfa. Shama mar mide? Because Rabbi Yochanan turned to Ilfa and he says, did you hear anything? Amar le lo? Ilfa responded, he did not. Amar, so Rabbi Yochanan then says to himself, Midishmai ana v'ilfa lo shama, since I heard and Ilfa didn't hear this conversation of Malachim, Shmamina l'dide kai malishata. Apparently, the Malach was giving me a message. It's evident that when the Malach said, his Sha'ah is going to come, greatness is going to come at a certain time for one of them, it must be that he meant me. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to internalize this and recognize, wait a second, I have another choice to make then right now. Am I going to pursue the path that I decided just moments earlier of leaving the halls of the Beis Medrash to pursue a Parnassa? Or am I going to go back to the Beit Midrash? Amar le Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan turned to Ilfa and he says, this is what I'm going to decide. Ihadar, let me return. I'm going to return to study Torah. Va'okei benafshe. And this way, I'm going to fulfill another pasuk. Ki lo yachdal avyon mikeref ha'aretz. And I'll be one of those poor people. Rav Yochanan decides and he recognizes that his choice is going to carry various repercussions, one of which means that if he goes back to the walls of the Beis Medrash, if he returns to learning Torah 24/7, then what's going to happen? He's going to live a life of destitute. He's going to live a life of poverty. Rav Yochanan hadar, and Rav Yochanan decided he's going to go back and return to the Beis Medrash, Ilfa lo hadar. But Ilfa stayed with his decision. He is going to pursue a life of business. Ad ata Ilfa. By the time Ilfa did go back to the yeshiva, Malach Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was already in a high position. He had already been appointed as Rosh Yeshiva. Amru lo. And that's when the people in yeshiva turn to Ilfa and say, I ativ mar vagaris. Had you stayed and decided to learn Torah, lo havei melech mar, then Rabbi Yochanan would not have been crowned the head of the yeshiva. Rather, they're implying, Ilfa, you could have been Rosh Yeshiva. And Ilfa, apparently very insulted, says no. And my decision, when I decided to leave the walls of the Beis Medrash and to pursue a life of business, that was my decision and that was a good decision and I'll prove it to you. And he then says, Azotzlan nashe beskari desfinata. He goes back to the boat, apparently the boat that symbolizes his venture in merchandise and importing and exporting. Ilfa went and he balanced himself on the mast of the ship. Amar, he then said, I ikad deshali b'matnita d'ravchia b'ravushaya. Is there anyone who can ask me a braita, basically from the Tosefta of Rabbi Chia and Ravushaya, v'lo pashtina leimi matnitin? And I will not show you support for the teachings of Rabbi student from the Mishnah. In other words, I am still a Talmud Chacham. Even though I went to pursue business, I am still involved in Torah. So don't say that I completely left the walls of the Beis Medrash. Nafilna me'askaria desfinta v'tavana. And he says, if I can't answer one of your questions, then I will allow myself to fall from the ship, from the mast of the ship, and I will drown in the sea. In other words, he says, I will prove to you that this was not a bad decision that I made because you're all accusing me. Look, Ilfa, look what you forfeited. You could have been Rosh Yeshiva. Atahu savat nale. So sure enough, there was a certain old man who quoted the following braitza to him. Ha'omer tnu shekel lebanai b'shabbos. V'hein ru'yin latet lahem sela. And the following braitza says, if someone says to a shaliach, to a trustee of his estate, give a shekel to my sons each week to make sure that they can meet their expenses. V'hein ru'uyin latet lahem sela. And it would be appropriate in their case to give them a sela because the family is large and maybe one shekel a week isn't enough. Notznim lahem sela. You can give a sela because he didn't necessarily mention an exact amount. V'im amar al tznu lahem el a shekel. Unless he said explicitly, give them only a shekel. Ein notznim lahem el a shekel. Then we only give exactly what he said. Amar metu yirshu achirim tachtehem. And if he said that others should inherit his estate after them, ben shamar tnu, ben shamar al tznu, then we know that he only wanted a certain amount to be given to his children. And Ilfa responds, I know a basis in the Mishnah for that Braita. Amar le hamine Rabbi Meir hi de amar mitzvah l'kayim divrei hametz. He says, you see, Anna, I am still involved in learning Torah. I didn't necessarily forfeit my connection to Talmud Torah. And Ilfa is able to quote Rabbi Meir, the Stam Mishnah, and Ava, the fact that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hametz. He says, if this is what the Met says, then it's exactly as the Braita had predicated in that circumstance. And perhaps this is the context of Rashi to say, notice that Ilfa is very involved in all of these shekel, seke, sela types of terminology. He's Mr. Business, which gives us the impression that what was oppressing Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan at the onset of this famous story was their financial oppression. And we turn back now to the story, and we're going to try and understand from the story what Chazal are teaching us about decisions such as the ones that Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan had to make at various stages. I think many of us, and I'll even quote just from last week, and many of us certainly hear our students, our children, perhaps even ourselves, deliberating always between this choice in particular that the Gemara presents to us. Shall we stay full-time in the Beit Midrash of learning? Should our lives be devoted all the time to Talmud Torah, or should we pursue something else, whether it be a profession in business, in law, in medicine? I had a student last week who came up and said, Shani, is it okay if I pursue the sciences? I really think I want to study medicine. And I asked her, why would you think that you shouldn't be allowed to study medicine? She said, because I just spent a year of learning Torah full time, and I've been taught that this is what's most important, so how can I study anything else? I said, well, why do you want to study the sciences? She said, because I love science. I love medicine. I said, well, if you love medicine, then apparently that's what you're chafetz. That's what you're going to do. And look at Ilfa. The Gemara here isn't necessarily saying that Ilfa made a bad choice. After all, he doesn't drown himself in the sea because everyone's able to see that he is a Talmud Chacham. He says, look, I stayed connected to Torah. But then this brings us back to the initial choice. Both Rav Yochanan and Ilfa, a priori, decided that they're going to leave the Beit Midrash. They're going to leave a full-time pursuit of Torah study in order to be involved in a profession, in order to earn a livelihood. And it's only Rav Yochanan who overhears the malachim. It's only Rav Yochanan who hears this voice, which many parshanim explain, wait a second, Gena, there's no longer nevuah during this time. This must be a ruach hakodesh. This is his inner voice. Rav Yochanan hears himself saying, on one hand, maybe I should really be killed for leaving the walls of the Beis Medrash. On the other hand, maybe one of us really does have potential to become a gadol batorah. And this is really what's pulling Rav Yochanan. And he turns to Ilfa and he says, did you hear a similar voice? And Ilfa says, no, because that's not Ilfa's voice. And that's not Ilfa's desire. And that's not Ilfa's trajectory in life. Ilfa says, no, I never heard that. And the proof is that years later when he comes back to the Beis Medrash, and there's social pressure, and his friends and his peers are saying, ay, chaval, that you didn't stay in the Beis Medrash. Look what happened to Rav Yochanan. Ilfa says, but that wasn't supposed to happen to me. I decided that I was going to be involved in Torah and in business, and I'll prove to you that I stay true to my word, and that decision I follow through with in a positive way. In the meantime, we look at Rav Yochanan, who listened to his inner voice, who followed his inclination, who returned to the Beis Medrash and ultimately became a Gadol Hador. Let's take a look now at how some of the Rishonim understand this very famous story. And here, not only within the context of the classroom, but now we're going to see the various stages of how the Gemara tells us this story, whether it's Rabbi Yochanan who hears an inner voice, Ilfa who has external extenuating circumstances that lead him to his decision-making. The Vilna Gaon explains, based on the Pasuk in Mishle, La'adam ma'archei lev u'mehashem ma'ane lashon, kol darchei ish zach be'inav, v'tochen ruchot Hashem. Gal al Hashem ma'asecha v'yichonu machshavotecha, kol pal Hashem l'manehu v'gam rasha l'yom ra'ah. On one hand, man has ma'archei lev. We have the workings of our own heart. we have the devices and the intelligence and a certain level of security, knowing ourselves and the decisions that we make. On the other hand, there are also ruchot Hashem. There are also the directions in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to place us. So the first stage that we learn is recognizing then our choices, recognizing what it means to choose between whether it's the Beit Midrash and the Sfina and the boat, the world of business, or whether it's to choose between one university and another university, one high school and another high school, a choice to be involved in one pursuit versus the other. The Vilna Gaon explains in Source 5, Sod ha'inyan shel arbat ha'psukim, what those psukim and mishle are talking about, hu zerech ve'itza tova la'adam ech litnaheg ve'leilech b'rtzono yitbarach. These psukim are teaching us how to a certain degree, how to walk in the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I personally, a few times a day in Shemona Esrei, ask, or I should say sometimes, beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hareini na, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, teach me. Horeini Hashem darkecha. Show me Hashem your derech. Which derech is good for me? And the Vilna Gaon explains, this is very difficult to know which path HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to pursue. Ki kol adam va'adam yesh lo derech b'fnei atzmo leilech bo. Stage number one. We as people, but certainly as mentors, as parents, as teachers, we have to know that there is a specific path that's meant for every individual. Chanoch lenar al pi darko. Each path is meant for someone else, and for someone else, there's a different derech. Ke'en da'atam dome ze lazeh. That's obvious because every person is so different. Ve'en partzufehem domim ze lazeh. Just as our countenance, just as our appearances are different, ain't tevash nei ben adam shaveh, just as our personalities, our dispositions are very different, so too, our paths, our choices are meant to be different. And you can't tell one Talmud, and you can't tell two children to walk on the same path. You can't say that every student is supposed to follow a certain formula. There's no such thing as cookie cutting. There's no such thing as a mold when it comes to chinuch and decision making. Kshayu Nevi'im, when there were prophets, it was a little easier because they would go and approach the Navi, Lidrosh et Hashem, literally to seek God out. But even during the times of Nevuah, not everything was black and white. Vaya ha-Navi omer al-pi mishpat ha-Nevuah, zarko asher yelechba. And the Navi would attempt to direct the person in the proper path that was appropriate for that person. Lefi shoresh nishmato ulefi tiv'at gufo. But stage number one has to know the shoresh of one's neshama. One has to know the teva of the guf. We have to be very honest about our children's, our students' personalities, their strengths, their shortcomings. We have to be very cognizant of what their talents are so that we don't suppress them, and at the same time to ensure that they're channeled correctly. V'zehu la'adam ma'archi lev. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has pre-programmed everyone to a certain degree. Hashem has already given us our own system of thought, our own feelings, our own personalities. Shelo lo hayak rak la'aruch levavo, lidrosh et Hashem b'chol levavo, uma haya ma'ane lashon al yedei hanavi ech yitznaheg. Because otherwise, how will the Navi be able to direct him in terms of his behavior? But now what do? Now that there isn't Nevuah. So the Navi would know perhaps what's appropriate for each individual. But now that we don't have Nevuah, how are we going to figure it out? Kshebatla ha-Nevuah haya ruach ha-Kodesh b'Yisrael, v'ish rucho hu yodienu ech lehitznaheg. And based on that divine inspiration, the Navi would be able to more or less direct every individual with regards to the path that one should pursue in life. I'll keep in mind that this doesn't necessarily deprive the person of making a choice. He can still choose, is this the path that I'm going to pursue or not? The Ruach HaKodesh Yesh L'chol Adam Va'Adam. We may not have Nevuah anymore, says the Vilna Gaon, but we still have Ruach HaKodesh. And the Rambam ascertains this as well. Ruach HaKodesh is that divine inspiration that we all have, that sense of knowing ourselves, of knowing what we love, what we desire, of knowing what brings out the best in us. We have to elucidate the shoresh ha-neshama, the teva ha-guf. Ach ashrei adam lo yachshov Hashem lo avon ve'ein baruchu rimia. But at the same time, we can't say, oh yes, I love drugs, I love alcohol all the time. Because one then has to realize, wait, I have to be consistent with the Ratzon of Hashem. Machshavot Adam heim arba tivim, eish mayim, ruach, afrohem neged arba ruchot ha-shamayim, veheim neged arba otiyot Hashem. Because really we're a composite of the four basic elements, explains the Gra, which are really just expressions of the four letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the four directions of the world. That man is created b'tzelem Elokim. Kasher yesh ba'adam ruach shalem shekol arba ruchot v'arba yisodot hin merkava la'arba otiyot Hashem. We're the chariots for God. We have to see ourselves as vessels, as vehicles, to bring more godliness in this world. And therefore, Eina Baruchho Shum Dofi. We have to be consistent with Ratzon Hashem, as Tochen Ruchot Hashem, V'chol Darchei Ish Zach Be'inav, V'zeu Rabot Machshavot B'leiv Ish, V'atat Hashem Hitakum. It starts with Rabot Machshavot B'leiv Ish. We have our own Machshavot, and each one is a justifiable, correct Machshava. Rav Yochanan's Machshavot are correct. And he listened to them, and he heard them, and he realized, wait a second, if I'm the one hearing that one of us can become a Gadol Batorah, that must mean that that's what I really want, that that's what I really want to choose. I have an inner voice that says, Rabbi Yochanan, you can do it. You can become a Gadol Batorah. Ilfa, did you hear that voice? And Ilfa says, no. Because Ilfa doesn't have that voice. Ilfa knows that he can become a wealthy merchant and at the same time continue in learning Mishnayot and Braitot and Toseftot. And that's what Rabot Machshavot Va'atat Hashem Hitakum. And this is a corroboration of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended for us all along. Unless one says that I'm only going to listen to my own thoughts and I'm going to ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then obviously that's contrary to the Ratzon of Hashem Yitbarach. Ki zeh she'ein Baruchho Remia, zeh davuk mamash b'midato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When one makes a decision, when one chooses, one has to ask, what do I want? What are my talents? What is that inner voice inside of me? What conversation of malachim, so to speak, am I hearing right now? But at the same time, one has to ask, what does Hashem want from me? Aval im chas v'shalom yesh bo vavo shorish katan shepore rosh v'la'ana. Even if one has a little bit of an inclination, God's will is not necessarily my top priority. As yesh baruchho remia im yem mitnaheg al pi ruchho. Then just going after his own personal pursuits may not necessarily be the most honest approach. V'darchei izach v'yashar be'inav v'yipol mishamayim la'aretz ad asher lo yuchal lakum. And then he won't even know what Hashem really wants from him. The Vilna Gaon says, it's really not as complicated as we think. First, we have to turn to ourselves and ask, what are our ritzonot? What do we want based on our talents, based on our desires, based on our exposures, based on that inner voice that we hear, and we hear it differently at every stage in life, and we hear it in different decibel levels at every stage. But at the same time, we ask, what is Ritzon Hashem Yitbarach? Sheikar Ritzon Hashem Heim HaTorah VaHaMitzvot. But that's really not so difficult, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us what he wants. He wants Torah and Mitzvot. And therefore, if one decides, like Ilfa, I can pursue a life of Torah and Mitzvot, I cannot maintain my Talmud Torah and still go out and ensure a livelihood, then I'm fulfilling a mitzvah as well. And that's my ratzon. But Rabbi Yochan apparently is unsettled. Even as he decides, even as he's oppressed by the status quo of his poverty, he hears a voice that says, Rabbi Yochanan, you can be a gadol. Don't ignore that voice. And Rabbi Yochanan realizes, oh my, I better choose, I better make that decision. And he returns to the Beis Medrash. And even though one can look back years later and say, ay, chaval, just like the Chaverim of Ilfa, that society sometimes, certainly in retrospect, says maybe that wasn't really such a great decision. Ilfa, you could have been a Gadol Hador. I've heard many people saying this to wonderful surgeons, wonderful lawyers, and a wonderful businessman. Ay, chaval, you're so smart. You could have been a gadol hador. Look at what you forfeited. But that person made a decision. And when he made a decision based on his ratzon, and at the same time consistent with the will of Hashem, that was good for him. And it could be that when we look back, hindsight is always 20/20, and we may say, oh, you know what, Ilfa Chaval, look at the Torah of Rabbi Yochanan, that's the Torah that we follow till today, that's an everlasting, vibrant Torah. Ilfa, you could have also been a Gadol Hador, and instead you decided to compromise on Parnassa. You decided to live this de facto life of having a career. Shame on you. But that's not what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara says Ilfa's right, because when he made his decision, he made a decision that was good for him. And the decision that was good for Ilfa wasn't the right decision, wasn't good for Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan knew that. And even though years later, sometimes we look back at our decisions and we say, you know what, maybe we'd have chosen a little differently. But then we really think about it a little more and we realize that taking everything into account, the circumstances at that stage of our lives, and the desires and the options that we had at that stage, we would have probably made the same decisions all over again. This is, Hannah, as a teacher, as a parent, perhaps one of the most difficult areas of chinuch, in which we have to help our students and our children. We have to help them recognize what their real will, what their ratzon is. We have to help them recognize and also uncover those talents and what they truly desire. We have to make sure that they can certainly incorporate the ratzon of Hashem in those decisions. And when we look back, again, in hindsight, recognizing that the story here of the Gemara is illustrating that at the time of the decision, the right decision was made. And Rav Yochanan's financial desires in the end apparently weren't solved. Then we know that unfortunately he ended up living a life of misery. 10 of his children died. His wife died. And yet he became Rosh Yeshiva. He listened to that voice. What was right for him at that time really was right. Again, it's easy to look back and say, that was a bad career choice. That was a bad choice in a spouse. But no, when we made that choice, we thought that that choice was very good, and therefore we shouldn't judge choices by the result, but rather by the quality of the decision at that time. I recently told a friend who just helped her child make a decision, and she said, Shani, I'm not sure it was the right decision. And I said, but right now, when you helped your child make that decision, did it seem right for you, taking your child's position into account and the troubles facing your child right now? Does this seem like the right decision? And she said, yes, but I don't know if it's going to end up okay. And what Chazal are trying to teach us is, as long as it's consistent with Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as long as it's consistent with what you truly see and feel and know is right for you, then that is the right decision. What will be 20 years from now, we don't know. And yes, we hear and we know of the Torah of Rav Yochanan, and not necessarily that of Ilfa, but Chazal say, look at Ilfa. Look at him at the top of the mast of the ship, and he knows his Torah as well. Especially in light of what people are talking about, what they're thinking about, what they're writing about today, in terms of choices that people make and the underlying issues of education, and an issue that resonates certainly across the Jewish spectrum and something that we're all struggling with regard to differentiating between teachers who perhaps and are overly involved in their students' lives, and at times not merely helping them make decisions, but at times even imposing their own desires upon those students. And as parents, we know that this perhaps could be the greatest danger as a parent, to live our lives through our children, to try to make decisions that are good for us, but not necessarily appropriate for our children. Unfortunately, a lot of the methods that educators are employing and the kinds of things that are often said aren't necessarily good for that student at that time, appropriate for that child. Just this morning, a peer, a colleague, Shana Goldberg, wrote to me in the wake of this discussion that is going on with regard to, again, teachers and institutions teaching the philosophies and at times even teaching and perhaps enforcing or imposing their philosophies. And one should learn what is the right way to do this. Everyone has a right to teach and to try to teach our ideals, our values passionately, but they can and should be taught from a positive perspective. One should expose one's students, one's children, to the beauty of what we believe in. Allow them to see and experience why you have made the choices that you have made. Let them discover ideas that they never knew existed. Present them with the opportunity to consider choices they didn't think they could even want. Education includes sharing ideas and texts and thoughts and feelings, but a good educator works hard to share all this in an uplifting way and works even harder to make sure that the inner voice of every student, of every child, can be heard. Sometimes fear is an easy go-to, as is guilt, but using them is like a comedian resorting to mocking someone in order to get a good laugh because he or she can't be more creative. It takes hard work to formulate for yourself and for others what is so compelling about your message, and it's definitely easier to simply poke holes at someone else's. You may see quick results. It may be easier just to tell everyone what to do, but pervasive negativity and fear and of coercion ultimately bring people down. That leads to frustration, to resentment, to a feeling of being lost, and certainly to deep anger. And this is when one feels regret, when one looks back and says, this is not the choice that I really wanted to make at that time, but my teacher told me to choose this or said that it would be wrong if I chose something else. One has to be looking, as a parent, as a teacher, to foster independence. Our students, even the most loyal, will not be with us forever, and helping them develop the skills to navigate life is very difficult. Gana, these difficult choices in life are going to have to be made by them. We have to teach our students and our children how to make decisions on their own, and how they have to be responsible adults, and that's the ultimate goal of our efforts. Students don't always appreciate this in the moment, as children as well. Sometimes they come to us as parents and say, Ima Abba, you decide for us. What do you think is good? Instead of saying, Gana, what do we think is good? I always ask our children, what do you feel right now is what not only you want, but what you feel is right for you at this particular point. As they struggle throughout life's very tough decisions, dealing with the questions of their minds, they often seek out and even pressure their mentors, their parents, to tell them what to do and what to think. While an educator can and should raise ideas, considerations, and even hesitations, and to share thoughts, the primary role is to listen closely, to help the student figure out what they want for themselves after they have carefully deliberated and examined all the possible outcomes and consequences. Short of allowing a student to do something dangerous, this is the only way that real growth can happen. One should share what's on one's mind, help the student or child think through something clearly. After that, it's time for all of us to take a back seat. It's time for all of us to allow them to sit, even by a dangerous wall that may fall, and instead listen to their voices. We can't try to control other people. We can only attempt to educate. Our students, our children, must ultimately stand on their own 2 feet and take responsibility for their choices. Mistakes will be made, but much learning and growth will happen. It might take longer to get there, but once they arrive, then they'll be there to stay. Then we can hear of the Torah of Rabbi Yochanan. They won't feel a need to be deprogrammed. They won't feel a need to regret or to flip back or to question how they even got to where they are to begin with. We must think about the high price of denying a student his or her independence. At some point, it's going to happen in any case. And we may not necessarily be there at every turn, no more than a parent can help keep his or her children from ever leaving the nest. And then what? At some point, we must give our students, our children, the tools with which to make the best decisions that they can, and then educate them to trust themselves, to live with those decisions, to continue to learn and to grow even when they falter. To outsiders who measure success of a teacher or an institution based on quick, rapid external change, based on how many students end up pursuing the path of that teacher, it might look like there is failure. But those on the inside know how far someone has come, how much they have truly learned, and what is internalized and what will last a lifetime. I'd like to end with Robert Frost, who, as we know in his famous poem, The Road Not Taken, tells us of the difficulty in choosing one's own adventure. For those who remember those series, by the way, this was so exciting. You could choose your adventure of the storybook. If you want to get out of the locked room, then turn to page 67. And even though technically I could go back and reread the same story, but with different twists and turns, once I get to page 67, it will tell me now turn to either page 52 or page 29. And once I'm already on a certain path, sometimes it's difficult to turn back, but I was able to choose. I chose what I wanted at that particular time. And one necessarily can't always go back and choose the other. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry, I could not travel both. The perspective of the child who is growing up, who wishes to have both flavors of ice cream, who wishes to be able to pursue both paths in life and be one traveler, but we're all one. And each one of us has our own talents, our own personalities, our own strengths instilled in us by Hashem. So long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. And as we all attempt to make decisions on our own and certainly help our children in doing so, we try to see making this decision, it will lead to that and to a continuation in this path. And if you stay shenabet, then chances are you'll have a better shidduch. And then who knows what will happen thereafter and thereafter. And we try to examine what will happen at every stage, but we really don't know. Then I took the other as just as fair, because I could argue that the other path can lead me in a very similar direction and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. So I looked at both, but really I could only see what was before my eyes at that moment, though as far as for that passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden back black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. I looked at my first choice and I said, this seems very nice. But you know what? Right now, this one looks more beautiful. This one is a little bit more grassy. I'll leave this choice for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way. But I know that as soon as I step foot along one path, chances are I'm never going to go back to the other. I doubt it if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. We choose what is best for us, the one less traveled by, because we're the only ones who can really travel it. And there will always be a road not taken. Rabbi Yochanan never lived the life of Ilfa. He never knew what a life without poverty was. And Ilfa never knew what would have happened to him had he stayed in the Beit Midrash with Rabbi Yochanan. The most important aspect of education is to help to encourage at the moments of the decision to ask what's really right for me, what is really right for that child, that student at that particular time. And maybe it's not right for another child. And maybe it's not right for that child at a different time. And maybe I would decide differently at some point. Yet Chazal teaches us as well, that if we help them pursue what is really right for them, if we help them hear those voices, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help them every step along the way. Let us recognize as we try to educate, as we try to inspire, as we light the flames of our children and of our students to help them make those choices, to appreciate that for every choice there is a road not taken, but there is a road that the Ezrat Hashem will lead them to fulfill what they should be fulfilling in life, to help them become the flames that will then inspire the entire rest of the menorah. Tudarabah.